We are continuing WABE's coverage of the fight against child sex trafficking in Georgia. Now, just over a week ago, the state Senate passed a bill and a constitutional amendment to further toughen the punishments for child sex traffickers, and the package has now moved to the state house. Rose?
And Dennis, there's a provision that would require adult entertainment establishments to pay the state an annual fee of $5,000 or 1% of their gross revenue, whichever is greater. And that money would go to a fund to help victims of child sex trafficking. But the strip club owners have promised a fight. They say the fee is based on a false assumption that strip clubs are involved, intentionally or not, with trafficking of children. And they also say, Dennis, it's a violation of the First Amendment protections of free speech.
Well, earlier this week, on A Closer Look, you might remember we heard from Alan Begner, the attorney for many of Atlanta's strip clubs. Joining us now, Kirsten Widener, who's an attorney and former director of policy and advocacy at the Barton Child Law and Policy Clinic at Emory University. She's now working as an advisor to some of the groups which advocate for child sex trafficking victims. Kirsten Widener, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's start with the argument at the heart of this proposed fee, and that is, okay, why are we charging the strip clubs a fee? Well, in the view of the folks who wrote the bill, strip clubs are, whether they mean to or not, hubs for child sex trafficking, or at least magnets for it. And Alan Begner, attorney for many of them, said this week, there is no connection, he said, and it's not just because the strip clubs are vigilant. He said it's because what they do is something fundamentally different from what a child sex trafficker does. And here's what he said.
The adult industry, and the clubs in particular, are absolutely positively not involved in child fantasy. This is the opposite of what they do. And it seems to me unlikely that a customer who comes in who might want to see the dance of the dancer and who might also want to take a dancer out would have any reason to want to take children to bed. It doesn't make sense to me.
So can you respond to that, the idea that, hey, the clubs are doing something very different? They're basically catering to a different crowd than a child sex trafficker would.
Well, I have a couple of different responses to that. First, these clubs are in the business of commercializing sexuality, which is not fundamentally different, although it's a difference of degree. It's not a difference in kind. So they are in the business of selling access to women's bodies. That may be visual, but it's not. It doesn't take a huge leap of imagination to get from the visual to the contact based.
But now, in the clubs, the people who are working are, especially, and Begner made this point, that they're checked for age. So the people who are dancing in the clubs are consenting adults, as opposed to, so isn't that a fundamental difference?
Absolutely. And no one is claiming that the sex clubs are actually trying to promote sex trafficking of children. Some research done by A Future Not a Past several years ago indicated that most of the people who are participating in buying sex from children who are involved in sex trafficking aren't actually looking for a child, first of all. So the idea that there's some huge disconnect between the people who are buying sex with children and people who are interested in fully grown women is a little bit of a misleading idea. Secondly, Mayor Shirley Franklin's office had done a report called Hidden in Plain View back in 2005 that did show that arrests related to prostitution of children centered around the strip clubs in Atlanta. So there is some correlation between the activities that are legally permissible and those that are not. Now, again, the claim is not that the strip clubs intend that. And in fact, they may well be opposed to it and would prefer not to have it going on. But the fact that they are correlated still exists.
Well, then there's the other issue that Alan Begner spoke with Dennis about, which is the constitutionality of all this. He says the clubs will fight the fee in the courts as a First Amendment violation. And here's how he characterized the fee.
A clear tax on speech based upon the unbelievable assumption that somehow dancers at clubs are either underage or somehow dancing at a club contributes to child prostitution any more than just any other business, which it just exists and has streetwalkers nearby. Streetwalkers are everywhere.
Kirsten, now, does he have a point in saying, look, why would you put this fee on strip clubs particularly and not any other establishment where there might be sex workers who are just, like he said, everywhere?
Well, first of all, I think it's a misstatement to say that there are streetwalkers everywhere. I think that they do tend to concentrate in different parts of town, and those people who are exploiting children and other adult prostitutes are going to try and centralize their activity in places where they think they're most likely to find customers. And again, the Hidden in Plain View study showed that that does tend to concentrate around adult entertainment establishments.
Is there also an argument to be made for those that are in favor of this proposed legislation that whether or not you don't agree that we're talking about the issue of child sex trafficking, but trafficking in general, whether the person is might be 18 years or older, there's still a connection between trafficking, period, and some of these adult entertainment clubs.
Well, and looking at the Supreme Court precedent really helps us see that some of the constitutionality claims are maybe not founded for exactly this reason. The Supreme Court has repeatedly upheld restrictions, particularly zoning restrictions and restrictions on what dancers can wear, under the assumption that they have secondary effects. And these secondary effects include prostitution in the areas in which those things occur.
But are you saying, though, and this, I think, is part of what Mr. Begner was implying, at least, that, okay, we have this feeling, we have this kind of gut instinct that maybe child sex traffickers work around strip clubs, but we're going to charge you a fee anyway, and it's going to have an impact on your business. So doesn't that raise a question of prior restraint, for one thing, and also the constitutionality, as he mentioned, of First Amendment on free speech, whatever you think of strip clubs in general?
Well, I have a lot of respect for Mr. Begner as an attorney. He's a very smart man, but I disagree that prior restraint is the right framework in which to think about this. Prior restraint, as the name implies, states that we're going to try and interfere with the actual performance or expressive conduct that's at issue. This is a fee that's being imposed after the conduct has occurred, so it wouldn't fall under that prior restraint framework. Instead, it would fall under a content-neutral restriction. The goal of this legislation is clearly not to stop the performances from happening. In fact, if the performances stopped happening, we would not have any funds on which to draw to provide the critical services for the children at issue.
But Mr. Begner's point was that we also have, if you say via legislation, the clubs are linked to child sex trafficking, and you put that into law somehow, that would have an effect on their business and that would constitute some form of child restraint because nobody wants to be linked to child sex trafficking.
Sure. And I think one of the things to remember here is that we've got years of Supreme Court precedent already saying that there are secondary effects from these industries. And what the Supreme Court has consistently required is not absolute evidence of the connection, but instead that the lawmakers or the people developing the policies are reasonably believing that the evidence that they're using supports the connection between the things that they're trying to address.
We're speaking with Kirsten Widener, who has advised some of the groups who advocate for child sex trafficking victims. She's a former director of policy and advocacy at the Barton Child Law and Policy Clinic at Emory University. She is an attorney herself, responding to Alan Begner, who was with us earlier this week. He's an attorney for most of the strip clubs in Atlanta. This is A Closer Look on 90.1 WABE, streaming live at WABE.org. Happy to have you with us. With Rose Scott, I'm Dennis O'Hare. We're continuing our conversation with Kirsten Widener, who is an attorney, and she has been advising some of the groups which advocate for child sex trafficking victims. The subject, a bill in the legislature that would impose a fee, an annual fee, on strip clubs. And that money would go to help child sex trafficking victims. And strip club attorneys are vowing a fight because they say that's based on the false assumption that strip clubs have something to do with child sex trafficking. Let me just ask you real quickly as a way of coming back here that There has been an argument that, splitting the adult entertainment industry into pieces, that strip clubs, because they are so tightly regulated and because especially in Metro Atlanta they have to check age, they have to have the dancers fingerprinted, that they are not the places where you see a lot of child sex trafficking, that there's a bigger problem with massage parlors and nail salons and those kinds of things, although you certainly don't want to imply that all of those are involved either, but that there is a problem with other places than strip clubs.
I think that's a fair question. I think that there are lots of places where victims of sex trafficking are found. And in fact, the bill that we had a few years ago to post the hotline number for sex trafficking victims involved a lot of those organizations that you're talking about. The fact that there is more than one potential avenue through which kids are exploited does not mean that the legislature has to attack all of them in the same piece of legislation. They're really trying to build a sustainable revenue structure to help provide critical services, and it's within their authority to choose which way they want to attack that.
Well, and here's some numbers just to sort of put all this in perspective. Last year, the Urban Institute came out with a study about the underground commercial sex trade in eight major cities. This is what they said about Atlanta, that in 2007 alone, $290 million. Now, they listed three areas: Latino brothels, massage parlors, and online and street prostitution. But they also indicated that that number did not include other areas, which, and again, you don't want to make the assumption that they're talking about adult strip clubs, but that's a lot. If you have a hard time trying to figure out why all this is a big deal, that $290 million, that was just in 2007, sort of paints a picture about this underground sex commercial industry, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, and I think that it's really important to remember that this is a really hard industry to quantify. It's really hard to research because it is underground activity. So we have some great organizations like the Urban Institute who are trying to do that research, but it's incredibly difficult to gather.
Here's a quote from a law enforcement official in that report: "The younger the girl, the higher the price." Again, it gives an indication of, and for many years, Atlanta's been trying to fight this, what many call an epidemic, when you talk about not just child sex trafficking, but trafficking period in the Atlanta area and throughout Georgia. It's an issue, obviously, Attorney General Sam Olens has been fighting against. Every year we have legislation that comes up. I'm asking you now to put on your lawyer hat here. When Begner talks about that this is a violation of the First Amendment here, let's say you're having to argue against that. What's your primary argument here that this is not in violation of the First Amendment here?
Well, I have three different responses to that. The first is that Georgia's not the first state to consider this kind of a revenue stream to fund services. There are two other states that I'm aware of where this has been challenged and gone up to their state Supreme Courts. Both of those states, Texas and Utah, have upheld, their highest court has upheld a similar revenue structure. So the places that have tried this and sustained a similar challenge have found this not to be an unconstitutional violation of speech. My second response is that, looking at the Supreme Court case law, we can't necessarily say what they'll do because they haven't addressed this issue head on. But there are indications that point to states' ability to govern the reasonably believed secondary effects of the adult entertainment industry.
Alan Begner has promised pretty much an immediate fight if this measure passes, and if the bill is signed by the governor, a constitutional amendment would go to the voters. So it would probably take the voters' approval first before any of that could happen. But are you confident that the way things are worded in this legislation right now, that it would withstand a challenge here in Georgia and possibly even something going up through the higher federal courts?
Again, our state has not had to address this issue yet. The U.S. Supreme Court hasn't had to address it yet, so I can't state with certainty what those courts would do. I can tell you that the other states that have looked at this have definitely found it to be constitutional, and that in terms of this free speech context, there's a really telling quote from Justice Souter in one of the relevant cases where he said, on its face, the government interest in combating prostitution and other criminal activity is inherently not related to expression. Thus, this is not a free speech issue. This is an issue of the criminal effects that center around the expression, not about the expression itself.
Kirsten Wagner is an attorney. She's the former director of policy and advocacy at the Barton Child Law and Policy Clinic at Emory University's Law School. And she's now working as an advisor to some of the groups which advocate for child sex trafficking victims. Kirsten Wagner, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.